without any symptom, I've been asked according to the agenda, and I promise that in our next deliberation, several commission will be the first. Because most of the time, they used to be the last. But I've been asked by PG, saying that yesterday we were asking them, there was a flight, a cancellation of flight. So, as there was an amount which shows that they've been charging the department due to cancellation of flight. So, we were so concerned. And the response was saying, it's due to meeting that they change the flight and they are bound to sit in meeting until over the stipulated time and they need to cancel the flight and reposition. So they are charging. So he asked me that we just want to be here for the demarcation board. I hope Chairperson CRL Commission will agree, but today we will make sure that 1 o'clock is finished. Are you comfortable with that? I need to ask you because I promised.
Do I have a choice, Chairperson?
I want to strengthen our working relationship, so I promise that you'll be the one who will see the agenda, you are the one back. Due to some other issues that you want to I'll now give over to you.
What we are going to do and really share, respecting the time constraints that we actually have, as usual, I'm going to ask the CEO of the board to lead us in the presentation of the report. But before that, let me quickly inform you and introduce the people who are part of our delegation. I'm not leading the delegation. I am accompanied by the member of the board who was the chair of the portfolio committee. The chair of the portfolio committee, I think they were public, and the CEO, Ms. Lela, who's going to be assisted by the CFO of the board. One of our staff who is the manager in charge of our material as volunteers,
thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee and board members from PG and colleagues. Good morning. Chairperson, we sent the copies of the annual report via the Secretariat of the Portfolio Committee. We'll then take the members through the presentation and the outline of the presentation. We'll just recap on the last meeting that we had with the Portfolio Committee on the 19th of... Can you hear me, Chairperson? Should I stay? Speak louder. I'll try and speak louder. The last we will recap on the last briefing of the 19th of March 2013. We'll give you a sense of our 2012 strategic direction on which the annual report is based, and the output and development and the financial results as per the audit outcome. We would explain the regularity of the audit outcomes, and we'll give you a sense of our medium-term expenditure framework, 13 to 16, the strategic direction of the board going forward, and some general trends and experiences and challenges that we have as a board. We'll give you a sense of the status of the demarcation process in the current cycle, our challenges, and some concluding remarks which will come to the chairperson. And I remember that the last briefing in March, we briefed the committee on the board processes and the timelines for the current legal framework of our risk determination for the out-of-bounder cycle. We also gave progress report on the performance up to March 2013, which was the end of the last financial year. We appraised the committee on the strategic directives as per the annual performance plan that we submitted again, and appraise the committee on the public participation process that the board has undertaken, as well as the public meetings that were scheduled between April and May in terms of Section 28 of the Demarcation Act. Just to recap in terms of our timeline, our cycle started in June 2011, and it ended in 2015 when we hand over the ward limitation process to the IEC in preparation for the 2016 local government election. At this particular moment, we have just come to the end of the blue cycle, which is the first cycle dealing with the outer boundaries of the municipality. We will be commencing in November with the ward limitation process in Ennis. In the last briefing, we gave you a sense of the number of the proposals that we considered as a board. We broke them down per province. We had 128 Type A's, which are your technical dams. The 69, the Type B, which is a combination of technical and a bit of more community affected, with 25, and the Type C's, which are major amalgamations and recategorization, with 74. We also, in the last briefing, gave you a sense of the proposals that proceeded to the legal process and were published in terms of Section 26. We had a total of 204 proposals that were published, that the board published its intent to consider in November and in December. There were 113 Type A's, 72 Type B's, and 19 Type C's. In terms of our strategic direction that we set for the 2012-13 financial year, The first objective was to determine and redetermine the outer boundaries of local, district, and metropolitan municipalities. The second strategic objective was to delimit the wards of all local and metropolitan municipalities for the preparation of the 2016 local elections. The strategic objective number three was to assess the capacity of metropolitan, district municipality, and local municipalities in line with our revised model for capacity assessment. In terms of problem two, the financial management and accounting, the first strategic objective was to ensure that the board has sound financial management across. The second one was to ensure that we have good corporate governance within the board. In terms of our program three, which deals with corporate services, the first strategic objective was to ensure that the board maintains effective and efficient organizational processes, systems, and practices. The second objective was to ensure the maintenance of proper administrative system and processes, practices, as well as the necessary support for the governance structure. The third objective was to enhance and maintain effective stakeholder relations across the sector. The outputs and developments in terms of our annual report. The annual report is tabled to the committee for review. It presents some of the achievements, highlights of the board under the year under review. The primary areas of performance for this period were the ongoing review of the municipal outer boundaries, the ongoing assessment of the municipal capacity for the 3 years, the reorganization of the institutional administrative structures, the enhancement of the stakeholder relations and communication, the enhancement of the operations through national and international studies, the maintenance and improvement of governance structures within the organization, and the ongoing compliance with the relevant legislative and regulatory requirements as outlined in our constitution and in our legislation. In terms of the ongoing review of the municipal boundaries, we continued with the program which commenced in 2011-2012. As I said, that we started immediately after the local government elections of 2011. We also reviewed the process that needed to be completed by October 2013 so that we allow the process of the ward delimitation to commence in preparation for 2016 local government elections. We are at this point now. We also presented the total of 1,028 cases that we received. 824 of these were rejected, and the reason included the cases which have been consolidated, and we presented to the committee that in some cases we find that the proposals that are represented emanate from almost the same areas, and when we look at them, it would make a contiguous alignment if we put them together and we consolidate those accordingly and we notify the applicant. The other reason was the lack of functionality. For example, the proposal to align to a ministerial boundaries. The committee would recall that we are currently assisting the Department of Justice to align the ministerial district to the municipal boundaries. The third one is the lack of stakeholder support and concurrence. Usually, if a member of the public is applying for the boundary readjustment, it is important that the municipalities that are concerned should be informed, as well as the other social structures or community structures that are going to be affected by those. The last one is the non-compliance to the legislation. Some of the proposals that we receive don't comply with the legislation, and those are some of the reasons why some of the cases were excluded. In this particular cycle, we had 166 meetings that we held with different provinces and included visits to key stakeholders such as MSCs, SAUGA, IEC, Provincial Houses of Traditional Leaders, communities where they were direct proposals from the members of the public. In the cases of the municipalities, we basically met and consulted with district family of municipalities who then coordinate the district and all the municipalities that are affected to that particular district, and the consultation basically would be at that level. We published the Section 24 notice in November 2012, and that closed in December 2012. After the consideration, the board resolved to close 22 cases and to investigate 8 cases of the 204 published cases. Most of the cases that were Type A, which were technical alignments, where there were no objectors to those, we basically proceeded to Section 21. We had shorter time frames, which were challenges in publishing the Section 27 notices for media investigation and public meetings. We were required by the law to publish in the national and regional newspapers our intent to investigate and our notices for the public meetings and all the communities that are going to be affected. And that, in a way, takes a bit of time. We had to work through the GCIS to facilitate the process. And I think we should be grateful that the GCIS were cooperative in this regard. In some cases, I think the challenge was that some of the papers, especially the regional and community papers, are sometimes once a week publications, which may be very difficult to do that time of day. The ongoing assessment of the municipal capacity, we had reported to the board that we have a new revised approach to capacity assessment, which was adopted by the board, which basically broadened the objectives of looking at the capacity assessment. We also, in the assessment that we had, we conducted it in terms of the context of the three independent but key local government local government performance areas. One, we looked at the socio-geographic and legacy sectors that impacted on the municipality's ability or inability to have the right capacity to deliver on their mandate. We also looked at the constrained capacity, which includes resources, skills, and competencies, especially as it impacts on the rural municipalities that are unable to attract some of the skills and the competencies that they require to do some of the things like engineers. We also looked at the issues like leadership and governance challenges, which basically we see putting a number of municipalities under administration and how that can be enhanced. The end result of this assessment of municipal capacity was that, one, there was a national analytical report that looked at all the municipalities across the country, powerful nine, that did not participate in the survey. We also basically looked at comparing the performance across the nation. We also looked at the municipal comparison report, the different sizes of the municipalities and how they performed against each other. We had a district-level report scorecard, and then we did nine in-depth qualitative assessment reports for nine districts. Each district, each province had one district being assessed. We thought that basically gave us a better sense of understanding what the challenges were and how we do the capacity assessment going forward. We had also introduced an online questionnaire. Basically, that posed an initial challenge for some of the municipalities that did not have sound IT capacity. We are in the process of reviewing that and looking how we can provide support to those municipalities going forward. In future, more support will be afforded to those municipalities using CETA and other agencies that would assist to boost the IT capacity of these municipalities. In terms of the 12-13 outputs in development, there was much more emphasis in the board on enhancing the stakeholder relations and communication. The following circulars were issued, and we had also broadened the membership of the people that we sent the circulars to. We had circular 2 of 2012 that contained the revised time frame, the commencement of the legal processes, and the reminder to submit motivations. These circulars go to the minister, the MECs, all the municipalities, metros, districts, and local municipalities. We send it to the national and the local, the provincial houses of traditional affairs. We send also this to SAGA, IEC, and other critical stakeholders in the sector. We also have Circular 3 of 2012, which contains the information regarding the newspapers on Section 26 notices in November. We also reminded people of the invitation to submit the views and representation by 10th of December. So we communicated using the popular media that we find in the country. We also did a number of visits per province. We visited all the provinces, and KwaZulu-Natal seemed to have a number more visits that were conducted and consultations. It was because the number of proposals that we received in this particular cycle came from KwaZulu-Natal, so the consultation basically had to touch all the areas that were going to be affected. In terms of our enhancement of operations, traditional and international studies, a research unit has been established in the board and is currently being staffed to manage the research and international municipal capacity assessment. We're basically looking at the work that we're doing, which requires extensive research, and we basically try to build this capacity to manage the internal capacity assessment process. We will be keeping the data that we're collecting and making sure that from time to time to assist the stakeholders with the correct information and the correct data that we require. So the creation of this research unit in the board is going to be an effort. The recruitment process is underway for other heads in the stakeholder management, as well as in the GIS unit, where we are enhancing our performance. In terms of the maintenance and improvement of governance structures, we have appointed the head for legal and secretariat in January. The board charter and the code of conduct were drafted and currently being refined within the board. In terms of our ongoing compliance with relevant legislative and regulatory requirements, where compliance to legal provisions remain the cornerstone of the board, our act is very clear in guiding our processes and how the board follows in terms of dealing with the proposals to the committee. In terms of the reorganization of the institutional administrative structures, the process to signify the and restructure the organization was continued during this period, and the appointment of key staff and key positions is currently underway and being finalized. In terms of our 2012-2013 financial results, Chairperson, I would like to hand over to the CFO to take us through the rest of our financial report. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. I'm going to deal with five items, just the summary of the financial results, receipts on during the year and the expenditure for the year, and the breakdown to that expenditure, as well as some of the trends compared to the previous financial year. In terms of the summary, the total income received was 41.3 million. Expenditure to that for the year was 34.3 million, resulting in an underspending or a surplus of 6.9 million. The in terms of the expenditure budget variance, that is 6.6 million underspending on the budget. However, just to relate it to the revenue, that is, we spent 82% of our revenue received during the year, of which some of the revenue was also internally generated income, such as interest and sale of merch. At the end, there were commitments which were not paid for, of amounting to 4.4 million. In terms of our financial position, the accumulated surpluses over the period is 27.2 million. The next slide just gives an indication of what is grants and what is internally generated income. The MTEF allocation was 40.3 million. Receipts from local government sector, which was recoveries for salaries or stipends for interns, was 35,000, and other income on interest, as I indicated, and sale of maps was 926,000, resulting in that total. The expenditure for the year ended as compared to the budget. Grants, as indicated, they are above the budget by 35,000, which is grants from local government sector, which we don't budget for. Other income was higher than the budget at 429,000, mainly because of interest generated in surplus cash. The total expenditure was underspent by 6.6 million, resulting in that surplus of 6.9 as I indicated before. The next slide, Chairperson will give you a detailed breakdown of expenditure for the year. Our major expenditure items is employee benefits as a service organization. We have that at 38%, at 30 million. Secondly, the project expenses, which relate to the capacity assessment project, is 10% at 3.2 million. And other operating expenditure at 17%, administrative expenses at 29%, that is 10 million. The next slide is just a pie chart which shows the same breakdown of our expenditure. Again, you can see on the pie the data that is employee benefits. 2% of that is audit fees and so forth. On the next slide, we give a breakdown of our other operating expenditure, which was not detailed. Of the other operating expenditure, there is several items there, which includes license renewal, travel and accommodation, courier for delivery for our notices and so forth, acquisition of data and rent. Just to note that half of that, almost 47% of that, is on travel and accommodation because of the visits that we did getting in the flight for consultation on all the requests that we received since 2011. The next slide just shows the year-on-year growth trend. If we will look at the entire expenditure, it's relatively been stable, just declined by 4%. But some of the major drivers for that is because, indicated by the CEO, most of the expenditure has been contained, but one of the key drivers was the fact that the capacity assessment project took over 2 years, which we see a dip in 34% of the expenditure, as well as other operating expenses of 16%. But relatively, the expenditure has been relatively stable. The next slide just shows all the major categories of the expenditure items, and just indicating the trend between the two financial years, 2013 to 2012. The same trend is that the expenditure is fairly stable. Once we've dealt with the financial results, I would want to also touch on the regulatory, the outcomes of the regulatory audit by the Auditor General. We did achieve an unqualified audit opinion. There were, however, some matters of emphasis. With respect to material understanding of the budget. We have, however, had committed those. The commitment, if you look at the cycle of the demarcation of the demarcation process, it's such that some of the processes, such as investigations, were committed at the end of March, which we then did during April, May, and June, including some of the investigations and further consultations, which in terms of the acts on public meetings, were conducted over that. Some of those commitments, as I indicated, also include the publication of notices and publicizing meetings through radio and newspapers. However, in terms of the other findings, was that there were deficiencies in expenditure management, which resulted in irregular expenditure. What have we done in terms of steps taken to address, on the next slide, steps taken to address internal control weaknesses? On the supply chain, during the 12-18 financial year, there were vacancies in the supply chain management unit. We have since February appointed a senior finance officer. Recently, we've also capacitated it further with a junior SEM officer. So at the moment, they are fully capacitated. This is to ensure that there is adequate capacity within the unit to respond to business demands for SEM services, so that the processes are followed to the T. And also ensuring that the segregation of duties in that environment to strengthen that internal control. We have improved the processes of SEM. Previously, we only had what we called a tender committee. Now we've got two separate committees in terms of the treasury regulations, a bid evaluation committee, and a separate bid adjudication committee, which ensures that the controls are improved. We've also implemented administrative controls, such as compliance checklists before payments are done, so that we check adherence to regulations and our own internal procedures. In addition to that, there is now an annual procurement plan, which ensures that there is SEM is aware of what the business requires throughout the year and plans accordingly to issue tenders and so forth. In addition to that, we also ensured that internal audits reviews the tender processes prior to the awarding of significant contracts. While management is the first level of assurance, we've also implemented the internal audit so that the accounting officer and the board are assured that the processes were indeed followed. Going forward, the next slide is the medium-term expenditure. For the 2013 current financial year, we have been allocated for the 2.1 million from the system. In terms of the allocation for the 2013-14 compared to the previous financial year, that's an increase of 1.8 million, which is 4.4% increase. The slide just gives the committee a view of what we've been allocated in the next three financial years, beginning 2013-14, which is 45.7 million in the outer years. This allocation obviously includes reductions in baseline for the period. I will now hand over to back to the CEO.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to proceed with the status of our demarcation process, at the end of the 2013 financial year, 26 views and representation were received and processed by the board. And during the current financial year, the following developments have taken place. One, 26 public meetings were held by the board with respective stakeholders. This is in terms of Section 28 of the MDB Act. 33 formal investigations were conducted prior to the publication of Section 21, and that also is in terms of Section 28.7 of the Act. In addition, 21 community consultations were basically, it wasn't really the major proposal, but we felt that it is important before the processes are completed that we also go again and confirm the information of the proposal with the community. And in August 2013, the board published Section 21 notices inviting the public to submit objections to the municipal boundary determination. And the closing date of the objections was 16 September 2013. And after considering the objection, the board indicated that the entire demarcation process will be finalized in the Gazette end of October 2013. The pie chart and the table gives you just a sense of the cases that we published. You recall that we said 204 cases went to Section 26. And in terms of Section 21, 157 cases were published, and the number of objections that we received were 9,835, and the breakdown is given there, 17 objectives from the Eastern Cape, 9,792 from Gauteng, 17 from KwaZulu-Natal, 1 from Limpopo, 4 from Mpumalanga, 1 from Northwest, 2 from the Northern Cape, and 1 from the Western Cape. In terms of our strategic direction going forward, I'd like to hand over to the chairperson. I'm not sure if the chairperson would like to take over from that.
Thanks, Chair. I think as Mr. Chair, maybe these are things that we have said before at another point in time, but it's just to really indicate that, you know, bearing in mind that I will try. So what we are saying is that clearly the work of the board increasingly, I think the focus really should be how you actually engage with the stakeholders. We're suggesting that this will be an area of focus, you know, going forward. The advocates have already indicated that you know, steps have now been taken to actually bolster our research capacity and capability. And I think, you know, increasingly, much as we're not trying to suggest that, you know, a demarcation is an exact science, but I think it becomes quite important that whatever decision that we do is actually underpinned by some form of analysis, and that actually you know, talks to the point that we clearly are saying that there are other matters within the policy arena that really needs to be looked at, and I think you know, from our view is that you know, as a board, we would like to really begin to make our contribution in that aspect. The fourth item, really, our internal capacity, you know, as an organ of state, it is something that we are increasingly would be announcing. And I think with the cooperation of COFTA, have suggestions in terms of what we believe should be the legal amendment that would enhance the current implementation legal framework. Communication is clearly an issue that we would have to, you know, to look at. Chairperson and the members of the committee, the issue of communication and the awareness of the board becomes also critical. You will be aware that following this particular outer boundary delimitation process, we're going to start with the issue of ward delimitation. A process that is obviously not immune to difficulties and controversies. We're saying is that going forward, that will be one of the issues, intensive, you know, awareness. And I think in the past, let me say, we've also taken some of the advice that we've actually put in terms of how best we should be able to do that. And let me assure you that we will be taking these on board. The other issue that has been mentioned here is the issue of working closely with our fellow institutions, and in this regard, particularly those Chapter 9 institutions. Here we, and I think it is something that was even suggested in the last engagement that we actually had. We're quite aware that in most of the cases, people do, you know, register some of their concerns with various institutions. I think in particular, I know for a fact that, you know, the Office of the Public Protector, the Human Rights Commission. So we're saying that we would find a way in terms of how we should actually engage with them, so that really we should be not making a problem on an issue that is actually not a problem. So that's what we actually meant by the in the part one bullet. The last bullet is to then is to say that the Demarcation Act needs to be updated, Chair and members. There are gaps, and we believe that I think maybe the time has come, and given our experience, that we need to actually close the gaps, provide certainty, and then if there are ambiguities, try to actually address those by seriously looking at some of the regulations regarding the Demarcation Act. Challenges abound to the members of the committee, indeed one of those, and I keep on preaching this one, is an expanding interest from our people in terms of what the board does. It's not only an expansion of the stakeholder base, but it's a stakeholder base that is becoming increasingly aware and then now understand what the impact of the board's work is. And again, this is something that we know that the support alone cannot really do this, but I think we will be it's a challenge that we will always be confronted with, and it's something that we will posit here as one of the challenges that we and indeed we have mentioned the issue of regulations. We are also saying, without really seeming to be choosing, that municipalities, whether we like it or not, are really part of this business of informing people. We are saying is that to an extent that it is actually possible, it would be quite important that some way of visualizing the manner in which demarcation is being dealt with the municipalities is encouraged. Now, as we said, the municipalities needs to play a much bigger role. And I think the issue around that, talks to this point as well. We think we are already to some extent winning the battle around getting an understanding what the role of the board is. But at times, I think maybe the more we get understanding, the more we actually maybe need to intensify it in terms of what the board is doing with the money. The truth is that there are certain things that comes up as demarcation, and yet they are actually not. It was quite interesting, it made us feel the middle of the time, Chair and all the members, but we had a seminar yesterday with the National Council of the Provinces. And one of the things that the Chair of the Select Committee, mentioned was that, a lot of issues that are demarcation are actually not demarcation issues. And I think, I thought that statement, it's a very true statement that in most cases what comes out of the decision is funded by health issues that should be resolved by all other means except within the location. We did say that the issue of the gaps is a challenge that we will be going through. So with those matters, we would like to then say Chair and the members of the committee is that we are under no illusion that the board's mandate and the pressures are actually quite huge. We have mentioned that a number of times that perhaps if there's one institution whose mandate and impact is not as another institution is a demarcation board. And in this respect is that we will still be beating the same drum to say I think there must be a consideration in terms of actually ensuring that we have appropriate resources that will be able to that will enable us to be able to charge our mandate. I think in conclusion I said I don't want to keep all the other points, but we want to end up by actually saying is that in the last 4 years we have had challenges, but I think we believe that we are still in a much stronger position than we were then in the past, and we are confident that we will be able to discharge our mandate despite the challenges of having to go to the board. Thank you.
Around the golden gate, but I will pick it up later on in the evening.
questions here. The first one is, what motivates the board to demarcate a particular area, and what happens if the community in that area object to their area being demarcated? The second question is, does the demarcation board at times find itself under political pressure to demarcate a particular area for political reasons and not for administrative purposes?
I just want to check, under the cases that we submitted to the presentation, indicate that 824 were rejected. If you can maybe expand more, maybe make an example of which cases, maybe in which area that you can locate those cases, because the ones that you successful is more lesser than the ones that you rejected. And another thing is, just want to check, the 824 rejected cases, are the people being advised or informed on how, maybe how they can lodge cases on cases like, maybe get education on cases that they are supposed to lodge or not? With the managerial boundaries, at least I just want to comment that at last a negotiation has been long in government, and they were still operating under apartheid boundaries, calling their own boundaries, not dedicated to the country. I comment that the process maybe to be, I'm looking forward for it to be finalized. I just want to check under the obviously, maybe before that, I just want also to appreciate and commend the board by obtaining the unqualified audit opinion, looking forward maybe for better audit opinion. We haven't even specified what were the findings. It's unqualified with no findings, or what were the findings. And also with the audit fees, I just want to check the 819,000 fee, audit fee, were consultants involved in assisting the board in conducting their internal audit so that they'll be able to keep records and obtain this audit outcome and just in general. We take note, Chairperson, we just look closer the Demarcation Act, which needs to be amended, and the Commission to look at it, and we take note of that one. In improving efficient and effective administration, in your last financial year, there were some vacant posts that were not filled, and in the presentation it was highlighted, which led to some of your targets not being met. So I just want to check, haven't been filled those posts, have you met the 2011-12 targets that you targeted? And also, it is highlighted in the presentation that the board incurred an underspending related to capacity assessment, which has not been performed. I just want an explanation on that. What led to you to intent and obtaining understanding because of the focus of the capacity assessment. Lastly, under performance bonus, it is highlighted that the accounting officer has received a performance bonus of 72,000. Can we then get a clarity led to maybe excellence or merit that has been carried out that led to this provided or given out. If there is not any other question, then I'll turn over to the chairperson to do that and respond to the question.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. If you allow me, I'll share these questions with staff and colleagues. Let me start with those questions related to visits to the services of the we actually visited all those provinces have had cases that needed to be engaged with the stakeholder. So in the province where the few cases which are over 10,000 in each time, I think the province has been able to take one specific visit there. So I think again it's a question as to where do we spend resources just in terms of the program. The issue of understanding, I need to explain, and I think Honorable Ntanyata has also raised this. Indeed, it does relate to the issue of capacity assessment of the work of the board. You will recall that we used to do these exercise annually. We then, as a board, took the decision that we must do this exercise biannually, precisely because we changed the model to firstly to the electronic phase, but secondly, not only to cover the local municipalities and districts, but to also cover the metro. But we've also added one aspect in this, and I think the inaugural copy you recall was actually shared with you, was that not only are we just simply collecting the indigenous statistics, but we must also have some statistics in the report. Because we've repositioned this report to be a strategic source of actual insight, it also then became important that it cannot be done annually. It has to be done at least in a slightly longer period, because the issues that we want to come at are the issues that are really and are sustainable. So it's more a question of time. But I have to say also, but one of the reasons why that I've not indicated, and that the decision that we also took was to say, obviously with the intense consultation on the issue of boundaries. And I think we also felt that we need to sequence our measures and pay attention to the issue of boundaries. But I'm pleased to say that the work is now well underway on that issue. And we have the report before the end of November. The large number of objections that eventually came from Metro Health, and yes, it is, we're actually quite a bit taken aback with this number of objections. But, you would see that it's really objections on only three cases. I must say, some of them are quite suspect. I think these are just one-liners that eventually came through. But see, the board legislation says you need to receive all those objections and consider all of them, and we have actually done so. So, but I think it was quite a number of those objections, and I don't know whether it's even for the record of this committee, but I've been told that and some of them seem to be coming from quite a fact, are coming from one person, that there was a fact that was humming quite continuously in one other area. But I think nonetheless these are things that the number. Some of them are associated, but some of them are really one-liners. But we have to record them, and the staff has to include them in the future. We want to do so. And the code is the obsession that we received. Indeed, the staff may comment on specific targets and proposals. The issue of participation by the communities and indeed the role of the municipalities, we take that number. It is something that we can only improve on it. I must say the issue of stakeholder management, maybe as a board we should take also responsibility for an apparent delay. You know, it's almost like flying a plane. fixing the plane while you're flying. But I think the truth is we have actually put in place on a contract basis this position. We are indeed would like to ensure that it is being filled by government staff, but we have been able to carry some of these functions. Perhaps we have been looking a bit too hard on the specific one. But I think it's something that will ensure that we will now put into effect. What motivates the board to actually demarcate? Honorable Member, you would recall that one of the drivers of demarcation really starts from simple technical corrections. There are boundaries, municipal boundaries, that are not correct. When I say are not correct, it's either they are not aligned to a specific, cadastral in a building area. Those are technical adjustments to ensure that when you have a boundary, it shouldn't just simply mean, discuss available boundaries. If a boundary is there, you need to adjust either to go to farm land or to go to a building. So that's basic at a very basic level. What drives the other one that we said was it's where quite clearly there is a boundary has become dysfunctional either by dividing the communities that they should have been put together. And this is one of those things that have actually come up particularly in certain traditional authorities, which I understandably may agree or disagree that there's always a sense that it's better for them to be either in one district or actually in one area. So these are some of the issues that actually drive us to look at this point. But there are other reasons. The other really major one is where we always talk of the capitalization, is where an area, for instance, is now beginning to show a picture of rapid growth, rapid urbanization, and there our legislation is very clear. So once an area starts to experience high density, once an area starts to experience high growth, population growth, once an area starts to have high migration patterns, or I'd say once there's too much movement of the people in that area. That area must be a metro contingent, not a category. So that is actually one of those factors that actually drives and the totality of some of the proposals. We have political pressure to do so. Yeah. We get political pressure by not doing so in some of the but we don't see that as a problem. Let me put it very clear. In my view is that, I've always said, to the staff, fortunately in the board, despite what you said with the resident, there's very clear criteria in terms as to what should the board take into account when it makes a boundary. Now, we have to listen to various views, including that of politicians. And we know, I think, without being disrespectful, in politicians, of course, if they have given a chance, they'd like to push their envelope and actually ensure that they're
talking about the elections.
but we have never seen ourselves to being ready in a non-judicial process to make a particular decision. We have actually been guided really by the criteria. So I can assure you that we don't make decisions based on some kind of compulsion. But clearly we need to take the view of everyone, including the politicians. Honourable Zanyoko, maybe the staff can actually elaborate more. But I'm sure the cases you're referring to were the very first case that the board looked at. This is probably what distinguished the board from the previous one. We actually literally went out and actually solicited proposals from from the communities. And one should expect that we always were going to have quite a number of proposals that that were not really consistent with the criteria. And the most obvious one would be where, for instance, people are suggesting a boundary change, but that will result in a non-contiguous municipality where it will make the environment not contiguous. In some cases, we find where the proposals, for instance, that actually touch on the proposed boundary, that is, that is beyond the fourth number. But all of those cases where the board rejected them, the people that were actually proposed to an extent that they could identify have been informed. And indeed, it's true is that in fact, in some of the original visits that we took in 2011 was precisely to actually educate the people about the boundary, and in fact make a point that every proposal that the board received is on the same level of preparedness, irrespective of where the person is located. So there was quite a great deal of empowerment that went through in those visits. I would defer the issue of the audit to the administration. I think I've dealt with the issue of understanding. Yeah, the issue of performance bonus. Can I take it to explain to you? And but I'm sure maybe the staff with the explore. And the issue of the audit too.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I think it's important just to provide a background in respect of the irregular expenditure that the AEG has actually revealed this year. I think they have done quite a thorough review over, I think the audit covered three financial years, just on the actual expenditure deviations that the board have undertaken in that particular period. And we need to emphasize the fact that this irregular expenditure was a valid business expenditure, and the deviations occurred by and large during the period in which we did not have a permanent CFO, and in fact the expenditure that occurred at that time were mainly on issues such as training for board members and staff, which was really provided by sole service providers, which in fact the AGL raised an issue around the fact that the reasons which were put forward for deviations, and not forgetting that deviations are valid instrument of the legislation and the trade regulations, but the reasons which were put forward were not necessarily justifiable for to bring forth the deviation process. The board is actually condoning the deviations on the basis that there were the expenditure was incurred for service providers which could not be compared, in other words, couldn't get free vacations, especially when attending a conference, for example. If a conference on on the same subject, and you necessarily have a conference of that particular nature being provided at a particular period. So, therefore, but the management and executive has taken a view that all the deviations will be scrutinized thoroughly. In effect, there will rule now that all deviations, we shall never accept any deviation unless there is a proper valid reasons which are in line with the Act. The report of the Auditor General is the standard reporting. In fact, it would appear that when it refers to the fact that the accounting office did not implement effective steps to prevent regular expenditure, it's just a finance report, but in effect there are steps, and there were steps which were in place to prevent it. But it was just expenditure beyond expenditure which we could not bring quotations for. And in fact, we failed the definition of emergency, because in some cases the Auditor General was saying you should have known, you should have planned the expenditure plans. And so that's why indeed there was an issue of irregular expenditure, but it was not, it doesn't amount to a breakdown of controls within the board. It only waited a certain period, and the board subsequently instituted or implemented the very sound controls going forward, and I'm comfortable to know that it's all in order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I'll just touch on some of the questions that we asked. Honourable Nelson talked about public participation in one of the areas, and basically is requiring to know what was the baseline for the 75%. You'd recall that in the board we only have 30 people that are servicing the 52 million people in the country in all provinces. And of that 30 people, there's about 10, 12 people that are in operations where this work is done, other than another unit. I think the board would want to go and do public participation everywhere, every corner. But I think the constraints that we have in some of the cases was that much as we would want to do that, sometimes we have challenges where you don't have enough people to go and do the public participation. And that's why our key focus was the key stakeholders, and I think the chairperson was saying, that we can piggyback on. Like the municipalities, they have ward councillors, and if we have actually dealt with the issues at that level, the ward councillors would assist. And where there are ward committees, we actually expect that they would assist in making sure that the information is transferred as much as possible. So our feeling basically is that in some cases there will be challenges of being able to deploy people everywhere. Even in cases where the Honourable Chairperson was asking why the A24, most of those cases were technical cases, and the originating from ourselves or SSA or IEC as technical alignment cases. Where there's an objection to that, we did not continue those cases because they would impact on people. Precisely also because they're coming from us as the originators. However, where we believe that they were non-contiguous boundaries, we then engage the communities and say, we understand you don't want, can you then understand what would be the basis? So in some areas where there's very serious non-contiguous boundaries, we basically went to the communities and we then consulted them on how they would see, and we had those responses. But we're also, what we had originated as a proposal, as a type A, which was going to split community or was going to have a negative impact on community, the board took a position that we shouldn't impact on the communities. We should look at other methodologies of dealing with those issues. So our issues basically were, even though we would have wanted to do the whole 1028, some of the areas we could not deal with because we have to do have some other considerations. The issue of the code, I think when we had our structure constructed, we were mindful of the fact that one, the board being a small organization obviously needed to look at how you get the skills at the right places, sort of jack of all trades. So when you advertise at the level which you benchmark with departments, you find that those people would not be able to take the law which is about 5 times the law that is the minister to be dealt with by a person who is in stakeholder management or in communications in a normal department. We then went back to the board and said we'd like to review the structure of the department. If you want to have jack of all trades, you need to attract jack of all trades at the right level with the right salary. So what we advertised and went through, we looked at and we said, but we don't think these are the people that would carry the board at the expected level, at the level at which they are. We need to review and revise that. That process is going to be finalized in the next few chapters. The Honorable Buenamo is issues have been dealt with by the chairperson. The audit fees, chairperson, these are the Auditor General's audit fees. We pay Auditor General to auditor. So their fees go up every time. We argue about that point, but there's nothing we can do about it. We have to pay the Honorable Auditor General to do that. The understanding the chairperson has dealt with the issue of the capacity assessment and that we are on track with that one currently. The issue of the performance bonus chairperson, I would have loved to have gotten that, but it was a little before my time. So it means you'd also look at the chairperson of the audit committee was explaining. After the Auditor General did not find anything to fault us, they went 3 years back to try and check some of the things that they did not check 3 years back. So the emphasis of the matter and the regularity come from that. As the CFO was saying, we've now put controls into place to make sure that our systems and processes are basically in the better position to have those reflect before they can happen so that we manage our processes in a much more structured way. So hopefully we get the bonus with the CFO. Thank you, Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. Mine is about 2017.
Where at this moment, Mujahideen people are still resisting. There was no one representing them at the municipality. How now that God is going to deal with this situation like this? Because there are no councillors who are at the council to convey the message to Mujahideen. Mujahideen is another area which was decided that Mujahideen must fall under trust. And they are resisting because there was no one who went to them and informed them about the change in terms of the organization. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe you need to start with the Honorable Mr. Samuel question. The board does not... The board member doesn't just go and decide that the place needs to be redetermined. I think the chairperson was explaining that after the election, the board actually did some of the stakeholder and the engagement and announced that we're opening now for the proposals. And that in terms of Section 22, ordinary citizens can put in a proposal, a municipality MEP or a minister can put a proposal for the redetermination. The ones that we do as a board is where we look at the boundaries. You'll recall that the boundaries have been going through the transitional process. In 2000, the boundaries were done in the Hague. And there are those boundaries that are still either are not aligned to the cadastre or are not contiguous. So we're looking at making sure that all our boundaries are contiguous to make sure that there's a proper break between the wall-to-wall municipalities and that within that, the number of people that end that municipality are able to be serviced by the municipality because they meet the norm of the number of people that should be serviced by the municipality. So when we look at this and we think it's not aligned to the cadastre or the boundary, you find that boundary that has something that is sticking like a finger. We then look at why that singer, what led to that singer. And some of those singers were created by the fact that if you look at some of the traditional communities, in the way that they allocate size to people, they do not look at the municipal boundaries. And therefore you find the municipal boundaries shifting to the neighboring boundaries. But because this is a community, then you then have that creation. So we try to look and make sure that those things are contiguous. The Honourable Mussimani is asking about public participation with Jenny. Honourable Mussimani, the issue of Mussimani, the board did consult on this particular case. The board did go to consult with the people of Mussimani. The ongoing consultation where there is no redetermination is another issue. But we're talking about the issue where Section 22 allows Citizen X to send a proposal to the board for the change of the boundary. That has to be consulted with the communities that are going to be affected. Mm-hmm. But usually sometimes people send those proposals without consultation in the community, without consultation with the municipality. So we think because within the municipality there's a ward councillor, I think it becomes much more important that ward councillor engages this person who sends the proposal so that other people in the ward know that there's a proposal to move that ward X into the next municipality because the act allows that to happen. So in the event where the board, because the verification is done during the consultation, we go and consult with the municipality precisely because they are the first entity that's going to be affected by whatever adjustment happens in the boundary of a municipality. There's financial implications, there's service delivery implications, so it's important for the municipality to have that particular sense of what is going to happen. And we then believe that the municipality should be the drivers, and we're not saying they should do that. But because the board has capacity challenges, we look at the municipality as a structure that has been legally constituted to have this public participation in terms of the 16 Act, and therefore that it is a resource that as a board we feel we could use to basically ensure that there's proper and sufficient consultation, because our assumption is that there are consistent ward committee, ward council, ward meetings that are facilitated by the councillor and the ward committees to ensure that the issues that affect the ward are dealt with within that particular ward, and people have their views of what is going to happen. We're not saying that we're going to be imposing that responsibility, but we consult with municipality precisely because we elicit that assistance and that support to make sure that we don't basically miss some of the cracks where people aren't going to be consulted about issues that are going to affect them negatively.
Yes, I think we have
covered
everything. Thanks for that. Members, I propose that we break for 5 minutes, then we come to the next presentation. So far about time, I think we still on track.
Oh,
Go well.
Thank you very much.
I can live with it. No problem. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks. Are you going also?
This is actually more important than going home to your husband.
So ja mal lecker.
Thank you.
Thank you.